We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. At least it can't get any worse. That's what I got to tell myself. It can't get worse, can it, Michael?
We won a game.
Are we gonna lose? I guess as long as we won one game out of four, you know. I guess it could get worse if we don't win any more games the entire season. It would be worse, wouldn't it?
We won a game. That's a start. It's crazy though. We finally. I mean, I don't know about you. I was feeling good in that Dallas game. Team looked like they were moving the ball. I mean, it was a blowout. And it's like we can't have anything nice. Of course, on the night when we get a win, our superstar has to go and get hurt, miss the next two games, and any chance of us stealing either of those two. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And then I look around the league and like see the other things that fans of other teams are whining about and the adversity they're going through. And I would kill for the problems that some of the other teams are dealing with right now.
Atlanta almost had Jeff Teague suspended for a game. That was pretty traumatic for them.
Oh, I know. I mean, that must have been tough. Memphis is struggling, but it's because one of their guys, I guess because Ed Davis has been out two or three games. I mean, the struggle is real all around the NBA. We're not the only ones dealing with it. it's crazy. The thing that's the worst about this is there's no explanation. Like, you have a team that's playing bad. We could sit here on this podcast and talk about why they're playing bad, but we have no explanation for why this injury luck or misfortune continues. It's not like it's the same people that are employed back when Baron Davis and Jamal Mashburn were getting vertigo and, you know, out for the year, or even the same people that were employed 3-4 years ago. They've brought in a ton, you know, tons of new equipment. Gentry came with his ideas and wanted to track players during practice. Like, things have changed and the luck just stays the same, and there's no explanation for it. So that's what makes this whole thing more frustrating.
It's got to be voodoo.
But who put on the curse? And, I mean, what do we have to do? It feels like, you know what, you and I should do, like, like The Ring or one of those movies, you know, you got to figure out who sent the tape in order to, you know, maybe get over the curse. That's what you and I do. I mean, we're wasting time on this podcast. Why are we not out trying to find out who put the curse on this team?
We should be investing. We should be down in New Orleans right now, you know, out in the, I don't know, the Voodoo Bayou.
Do you envision yourself more Sherlock or more Watson?
Have you ever seen True Detective?
Yeah. Which season?
The second one?
Uh-huh.
The real despicable loser? That's me.
Oh, I was hoping I'd hang out with Rachel McAdams for a couple of
That's right. I'll get some surgery. I'll try to make it happen.
Yeah. I fancy myself a Vince Vaughn type. Yeah, no, I mean, it's super frustrating. And, you know, I don't want to put all of it on it because, frankly, this team has had Anthony Davis for 8 games. They shouldn't.
They should have won something more than this.
Yeah, they shouldn't be 1-9. So I don't want to put it all on the injuries, but it's just it's a big part of it, and it's guys playing a ton of minutes plus Drew being restricted and not looking right. It's, you know, they could have stolen a game here or there, but still, at best they would be what, 3-7 right now, and it's still just an unfortunate time for all these injuries, and just sums up our season that the one night this team is finally clicking, looking good. Of course, AD has to go and get hurt, but I don't know. We had losses. I guess this is always the easier way for me to start out the podcast because it's shorter. You taken away any positives from what you've seen since our last podcast?
There is a few positives. I think Eric Gordon does definitely look better this year. Brian Anderson looks better this year. I said that last time, so I'm not going to really talk about that a lot. I will say, too, that players like Alonzo G and even like Ish Smith and Tony Douglas and Dante Cunningham, there are moments in these games for like a minute or 2 minutes of time where you can get the feel that if they had a slightly better cast around them where other teams had to pay a little more attention to other guys rather than them, they could fill in the blanks a little better than they are right now. So there is the potential that some of those guys could click a little bit better if they had somebody who could make the opposing defense actually pay a little bit of attention. And like, that's the weirdest thing. This is going to go to bad, so should I wait till later, or should I think of some more good first?
you could set up the appetizer for the entree that is bad.
Okay, so Drew Holiday. I don't even know what's wrong with him right now. I can't figure it out. I keep saying to myself, he's pressing, he's trying too hard, he's getting into bad, but he doesn't. He feels like a shooting guard to me. He feels like a guy who, when he gets the ball, he's already made up his mind what he's going to do offensively as soon as he receives the ball. Either he's going to shoot it right there, he's going to drive all the way to the hoop, or he's going to try to run a pick and roll and lob it to somebody. Those are his only options. He doesn't have any ability to probe. He doesn't, like, Ish Smith has a better ability to probe. Ish will drive under the basket and come back out the other side and try to find somebody. And, you know, have you seen Drew do that at all?
There was one beautiful play towards the end of the Knicks game today where he drove, and I was sure he was going up for a shot, and the Knicks were as well, and then he kind of handed it off to AD for a dunk. Remember that late in the game? But I just get the feeling by watching him, and, you know, I love watching during the timeouts, after a break, whatever. And he goes over, or probably Robert Peck more likely, seeks him out on every timeout. And it's, you know, you'll just see Drew nodding his head like, yeah, I know, I forgot. I don't think he's playing natural at all. I think he's thinking too much and doesn't know exactly what he's going to do. I think that when he came into camp and when he talked to Gentry over the summer, it was a lot of, all right, you're going to be off the ball, you're going to have a lot of chances to, you know, to run and pick and roll. If it's not there, we kick it out to the secondary ball handler. You spot up. You know, it was all this stuff. And now all of a sudden he's coming in. He's pretty much the only playmaker on the team, the only creator. And he's, you know, you see these stretches where he's like, okay, I'm going to be a creator now. I guess that's my role. Then they call a timeout, and then he jacks up like four straight shots, probably because Pack told him, no, you got to be more aggressive. And it's not, it's like he's just not playing his game or playing naturally. He's either overthinking or not sure of what role he's supposed to be in. Plus, you got this minutes restriction. I mean, there are some issues offensively. I still don't think he attacks and gets all the way to the rim enough. I don't like him. Today in the second half, he missed a bunch of shots in that 3 to 10 foot range. You know, against a team like the Knicks who foul a lot, I would have loved to just see him attack and go all the way. So there's still some other things, but I don't feel like he feels natural at all. I think he's overthinking it all the time. And yeah, I don't love what I see, but let's stick to the positive. So here's one that is alarming. I think we could say with the eye.
Wait, positive or alarming?
Well, so it's going to be a positive thing because
okay. My
overall view of this team is they've gone from a team in the first couple of games that play 15 to 20, maybe 25 solid minutes a game, to now they play 35. It's just in the 10 to 15 minutes where they're not playing great basketball, other teams go on these huge runs and they lose the game. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yes.
So listen to these splits, because this is amazing to me. So the last seven games, basically starting in November after the two Golden State games and the Portland game, because I don't even want to count those anymore. Golden State's it's a team in a different league. So in the seven games since November started, their defense in the first half has been, I don't use this word lightly, amazing. They're giving up, again, with their pace of play, in the first half of games, 93 points a game. Opponents are only shooting 41.5%, which would be an elite defense, a top three defense.
You're talking 100 possessions, though, right? Just so everybody's clear.
No, this is per. Sorry, this is per 48 minutes. So
okay.
So this is so. So yeah, they're giving up 93 points per 48 minutes. Opponents are shooting 41.5%, which is elite. They're only shooting 29.9% from three. They're only getting to the line 18 times. So, like, again, their first half defense would be the best defense in the league since November started. No hyperbole there. Literally the best defense in the league. Now you go to the second half. That number, the opponent points per 48 minutes, jumps from 93 to 116.5. The field goal percentage jumps from 41.5% to 52.2%. The three-point percentage from 29.9% to 42.3%. So they literally, in the last seven games, the first half, best defense in the league. Second half, those numbers would all make you the worst defense in the league. So please give me a hypothesis or two. What could this be? Could this mean?
You got me.
That's insane, right?
Yeah.
And seven games isn't the largest sample size ever, but it's also somewhat noteworthy.
Yeah, and it's not like you cannot say, oh, the other team's making adjustments, and because they already know like what players this team has. Like, they're not going to suddenly walk back there and say, holy cow, Ishmith can't shoot. Let's stop guarding him. Or, you know, they should already know most of their game plan and maybe, oh, let's just shift one guy here or start going under the pick and roll is the kind of adjustments you make at the halftime. You don't like, completely convert your team. That's very strange. I don't know. The only thing I could think of is, what are Eric Gordon's splits like? I got to wonder about that.
Well, I mean, still, that would be offensive.
Yeah, but maybe he gets tired, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would, to me, that's the most logical theory, is that the first half, you're fresh, and it doesn't really matter that you're thin and you don't have any bodies or quality bodies. You could go out there and play. By the time you get to the second half, you know, the lack of depth, the fact that you're playing so many games with a 9-man roster eventually shows up, and at that point you just get destroyed. But it's a trend, and it's another one. I mean, today against New York, this team had the lead in the first half. Really, if they would have had the ability to either grab some defensive boards or hit wide open threes, they could have been up double digits, but they weren't. And then to start the second half, boom, 8-0 New York run, and they basically controlled the game in the second half. But why I have this in the positive is that those first couple of games, there was nothing to like defensively, like absolutely nothing. It was just a straight dumpster fire. Now we're at least seeing for a half a game, not, you know, the claims that Dante Cunningham were making that it could be a top three defense. Maybe it's not, or top five defense. Maybe it's not insane, because they are for a half every game. And then eventually they just break down. But I mean, those numbers support a lot of what my eyes have been seeing. I see a team whose rotations are infinitely better than I seen early on. They're still not great at protecting the rim. They're still not a great defensive rebounding team, but they're not just leaving guys wide open for three and completely missing rotations and failing to communicate on the defensive end. And as you've seen, overall, opponents' three-point percentages have plummeted. Teams are only shooting about 35% from three this month. So I still think overall there's good things, because, you know, remember, our goal for this team is to be average defensively. I think especially once you get Coupon and some other guys back and have some more depth, and Drew Holiday playing his regular minutes, Norris Cole, et cetera, I think that's more than reasonable to expect. So I just have the defense overall in a good thing. They can't sustain it for 48 minutes, but they are showing signs of being a very good defense in spurts when they're fresh.
Okay. I've also liked Ajinsa. I thought he's looked pretty good.
Wait.
Which will?
Alexi Ajinsa?
Yeah.
Did you watch the game today, or you still got that on?
I mean, today, yeah. Overall, let me say that. There's a difference between, like, one game and how I felt he played the previous three games.
So, but let me ask you this. I mean, do you get the... Is it a little strange to you? We saw the Pelicans go out and spend about $70 million this offseason on Ashik and on Alexi Ajinsa. And then we have a game like today we had against New York, where I think combined they played 6 minutes in the first half. Tried to play him a little bit more in the second half, but still you're looking at about 20 minutes. You know, we heard Dell and Gentry say that they were on the same page and they both wanted those guys back. Do you fully buy that? Because, I mean, they're not getting the minutes, and it just seems to me that Gentry loves going small ball and is really having a difficult time trying to figure out how to use those two. Do you buy that those two are as much on the same page as they claim to be?
I will say that there is probably a difference in what was said to the reporters or anybody who asked some questions about those and to what the actual conversations were. Because they portray it as Amir can come in and be, you know, the Andrew Bogut of the Pelicans, and Ajinsa, he'll give him time and he'll get a shot and he'll be really good, and his great center off the bench, and oh, there's plenty of minutes for both of them. And you can say all that stuff, but I think what the conversation really was, hey, we need a center for when we have to go up against Marc Gasol or DeAndre Jordan or players of that type. and we can't buy one for the money that we have unless we re-sign Omer Asik. And so let's just get Omer Asik on the table, and that's the best deal that they came up with, which is still pretty extensive, but that's the best deal they got. I don't know why they went for Jinsa, other than they felt like maybe they needed that depth, and it's from, you know, it's obviously a good thing. The team needs depth, but I think that's just the conversation they had. We have these guys. We can sign both of them going over the cap with no problem, and we're not going to be able to replace them with quality players if we let them walk.
Yeah, and I think ideally they would have, you know, they thought they were going to have a healthy team, which shame on them for assuming that. But then in that situation, they're playing a Jinsa limited minutes, but his per 36 minutes look outstanding. And, you know, then all of a sudden he's a team that he's a player that teams might covet in that situation.
Yep. I mean, he had like almost a 20 PER last year.
Right.
And so if he could do that in 12, 15 minutes, yeah, absolutely. People are going to be like, well, in that role for 12, 15 minutes, he's a great starting center. So let's see if, you know, if we have a hole at in our front line, we can maybe go get him, and he becomes a nice trade trip at that point.
Right. Yeah, I think that was probably the ideal plan. I mean, but here's – so let me go the alternative of maybe how – it went wrong if you want to be somewhat pessimistic, or maybe not even pessimistic, but if you just want to question this whole process. So listening to other podcasts, listening to Del Demps himself speak and talking to people, it seems like what happened, and Del has said this himself, is when he interviewed people, he basically sat back and said, tell me what you think about our team and how you would use them. It doesn't take reading into things too much, especially if you've heard Jeff Van Gundy on Lowe's podcast, to assume that Van Gundy went in there and didn't love this roster. You know, he talked about how Monty did an amazing job, and you know, how they don't have enough shooters, and you could imagine him going into Dell and saying, well, I like this, but I don't like this, this, and this, and this is what I would change. And with the fact that Dell was doing the interviewing, I mean, whether he does it on purpose or not, he's going to have some bias to the players that he gave up chips for, that he paid, that, you know, that he wanted to bring together. So what would be more appealing to you than somebody who comes into the interview and tells you how much they love your roster and that they would use them in this way and yada, yada, yada? Maybe Gentry says that just to get the job, you know, maybe even convinces himself that he loves these guys' games or whatever. But then when the rubber meets the road and he's in the games and he gets to see these guys every day in practice, you know, he doesn't necessarily love what they provide. He wants AD more at center. Rhino's biggest value is next to AD, and now all of a sudden you've just paid $70 million for two guys that the coach really can't figure out how to use or doesn't want to use. That would be my half-glass-empty take. Any possibility that or part of that is what happened?
Sure. I mean, that could absolutely be the scenario. And I'll also say that it's not like Asik or even Ajinsa have been, like, dominant out there. They've, like, how many, what did Asik do today? He had one rebound, I think, in 13 minutes or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, one rebound in 13 minutes. Like, is that making a case? That's what he does. And he's not doing it. And maybe he's still having trouble with that leg, and it's very possible. But, you know, last year he was the third best rebounder in the entire NBA. By rebound percentage, the third best rebounder. And that wasn't by going out and grabbing one rebound every 13 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, he never has to hedge anymore. I mean, it's not like anything in the scheme is taking him farther away from the basket. Yeah, I mean, it's strange. They were a better rebounding team when he was on the court. I mean, there were a couple plays where, like, he would ironically do the Robin Lopez and box somebody out so somebody else got a rebound. But Yeah, it's just, to me, that's the part that's coming across as strange, especially with the Ajinsa. We see games where he doesn't play at all or doesn't play in a half. Then we see him against Toronto, and at times he looks like one of the best offensive weapons on the court. But, you know, today in the New York game, he was absolutely terrible. And it looks like he has no confidence out there. You know, I see people all the time saying, let's just put him on the second unit and give him the ball in the post. I know you and I talked about this a little bit. I know he's 7'2" and he has some touch. I don't think he's a post scorer. He can't get good enough position. He has no lower body strength. He can't really back somebody down, and he just seems much more comfortable facing up. And you know, so you're left with a guy who maybe you could run pick and pop for him every once in a while, pick and roll and throw a lob up. But I just don't know if he could be a guy who could go get you 6-8 points. I think people look at his size and his touch and assume he's a post-up guy, but I don't know. He barely did it at all the last couple of years, and I don't know if Gentry wants to run a second-unit offense through 18-footers from Ajinsa, so I just don't know how he plans on using them.
Right. Well, I mean, just think about last year and think about what you've seen this year. Do you have any games where you remember him getting the ball in the post and scoring two or three times?
No, I mean, they tried it a couple times against Toronto. He did it, you know, a couple times last year, but no, I mean, it's pretty rare.
It's pretty, like, he is a taller Jason Smith. The games where he suddenly put up like 14 or 12 points and people are like, oh, wow, he's a great off-the-bench weapon. They're like majority of those, I would say 5 of those baskets each time would be just mid-range jumpers. And that's not a problem. Like, that is a great safety valve. It's just, he's just a complementary weapon. He's not a primary weapon, and that's not a knock on him. He's actually fairly decent defensively. He's cut down on the fouling. He's just, you know, not a starter.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people are just frustrated because he is, you know, he is somebody that we respect as a rotation player, and yet we got guys like Guy, Ish Smith, Tony Douglas getting major minutes, and just because of the positions where we're hurt and the positions where we're not, Ajinsa isn't. But... Yeah, I mean,
yeah, you saw that picture that I tweeted, right? About the impact injuries had on the Pelicans. It's so ridiculous. It's like, I mean, I put a crossed out everybody who's been out at the time all season. One line across those guys who miss either significant portion of the season or are missing part of the games, like Drew. And the power forward, we had 3 healthy power forwards, and no other position was intact. That's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really unfortunate. But it's just something you got to deal with in the meantime. You said a couple other positives. You think Gordon and Ryan Anderson. Let me ask you this. What do you think Eric Gordon is going to be used as when this team is fully healthy? Because, you know, I found it interesting when Anthony Davis was out those 2 games. I think, you know, Eric Gordon was the clear go-to guy, you know, the creator, the scorer, the one, you know, you're expecting to get the most shots in a game. Then AD comes back, and Gordon looked a little lost in the first half today, like couldn't get him going. We get all excited about adding more talent when these guys come back, but that's just going to take the ball out of hands and make certain guys change roles, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think Eric Gordon's role is going to look like once this team is fully healthy?
So I think it's going to look a lot like it did last year. I think he's going to be a shooter and a safety valve attacker. And the thing about Gordon, too, is if you actually take a look at what he's done this season, when he takes fewer shots, he's less efficient. When he's taken a lot of shots, he's more efficient. Which is disconcerting. I don't know how to look at that. Like, there's only a couple games where he's really that efficient when he takes like 15 shots or less. Those games where he's touching on 20, he's usually pretty solid. So, I mean, he's definitely not going to be the one who's going to be attacking on the perimeter. It's going to be Tyreek. It's going to be Norris. It's going to be Drew. And I don't know. Maybe that just makes him expendable. But it's very hard to say he's expendable when technically he's the only guard on this team who's healthy right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of had some of the same ideas because I see, you know, there's always an optimistic way to look at things. And, yeah, I see people saying, well, this is the best Eric Gordon has looked. Think about once we get everybody back plus Eric Gordon. And I don't know. You see these spurts where Eric Gordon has, like, 5 straight points, 8 straight points, you know. Like, he kind of gets this rhythm and gets going, but that's with getting, you know, a lot of touches. It seems like if he doesn't touch the ball in a couple possessions, even if he gets a wide open three, he's going to brick it. So I just, that would be one thing that I'm a little bit concerned about is when they take the ball out of his hands more, that he's not going to be as efficient. And then, like you said, you have a $15 million guy there not earning much of it because I don't know what he's going to give you if he's not scoring or he doesn't have the ball in his hands. I will say defensively he seemed a little bit more active, which sometimes leads to the stupidest fouls. I mean, yes. Like that foul today with like 0.4 seconds on the shot clock, like I wanted to rip my hair out.
He is always reaching. Whenever there's a guy who he gets up against, he's bigger than him, he can't stop himself from reaching for the damn ball.
Yep.
It's just, it's awful. It does it all the time. And I got to say this, you know, we talked about this last year. The Pelicans had some of the worst rebounding guards in the league. He is playing 36 minutes a game and averaging 3 rebounds a game.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. If the ball's not going to be in his hands, if he's not going to be able to get into a rhythm so he misses shots when he gets them, he's not going to provide you with anything above a replacement player anywhere else. So,
I mean, how many guys can you remember on good championship or, you know, guaranteed second round players who put up stat lines like 20 points per game with 3 rebounds and 3 assists?
Yeah, it's...
I can't, like, Reggie Miller might be the closest, maybe. Or maybe Rip Hamilton. Either of those guys, I gotta go look, but it's... They're just... He's just too one-dimensional.
Yeah, although I will say I love the two-handed flush today.
Yeah, he's looked more explosive around the rim, which is nice, and that'll continue. So in transition, if they can actually get into transition, he might become pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how Gentry's going to kind of stagger the guards when everybody's healthy because, you know, Cole and Gordon were terrible together last year. I keep saying I want to see Drew and Tyreek on the court as much as possible, but then what does that mean? Does that mean that Gordon plays a lot with Cole where they were just turnover monsters? I mean, both of those guys are more two guards than they are point guards. So I'm curious to see how that gets staggered and what they do there. I also think, I mean, Ryan Anderson, I will say I love his effort and intensity this year. I think if everybody was playing as hard as Ryan Anderson has been playing, this team would have at least 2 or 3 more wins. Just on sure will. I absolutely love it, but I mean, they are just, whether they're asking him to or he's doing it himself, he's initiating way too much. There's too many offensive possessions that's, all right, let's get the ball to Ryan Anderson 20 feet out, and he's either going to back a guy in or, you know, he's going to drive on the guy, do something to create some kind of offense. Do you think that his usage is going to go dramatically down, or what do you think is going to happen when this team is fully healthy with Ryan Anderson that's different than what we're seeing with him now?
His usage will go down slightly, but only because he's going to be paired with Tyreek Evans at times. I've 100%, based on things that Alvin has said, feel that they consider him as one of their, like, their second offensive weapon, quite honestly. Like, he is... he's a guy who will always be the primary offensive weapon for the bench, and usually you'll be actually making the decision, do I want to be doing a pick and roll against Ryan's guy or Anthony Davis's guy? And if Ryan's guy is easier to score on, we're going to run it for Ryan.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. Right now it's really hard with Ryan Anderson and AD playing the 4 and 5 for the Pelicans to rebound at a high enough level, although they did seem to make it a focus in the second half. I mean, the Knicks had 13 second chance opportunities in the first half, I think only 6 in the second. They really focused in on that end. But I'm curious to see when you get a guy like Tyreek with them, and now all of a sudden you could get rebounding from other places, because I saw Rhino doing that a lot today as well, where he would just kind of box out his guy, and then somebody like Ish Smith would come in and grab a couple rebounds, which I always feel bad because I feel like I knocked that guy so much. I love his heart and hustle. I just, you know, I hate his limitations for, you know, what we are right now as a 1-9 team. But I'm just curious to see how some of these other guys are affected, because I think we tend to think it's going to be all positive effects, that we're going to get three players back that are going to take minutes from, you know, terrible players who are getting those minutes now. But there's always going to be unintended negative consequences, and I just wonder what it's going to be for those guys. So 1-9, we talked about this. We talked about getting buried in a hole that they can't come out from. You said basically that if you fall 10 games under 500, that's it. Playoff hopes are done. Let me be a contrarian, though, because I hear this all the time that, oh, you can't fall this far down in the West, the West, the West. All I ever hear about is the West. People get stuck on this past of, you know, the West. You could win 48 games and not even make the playoffs. I'm sorry. You know, things change from year to year. The West is not the West this year, in my opinion. The Pelicans have been terrible. But when we talk about those other teams competing for the 6, 7, 8 seed, maybe even 5th, because maybe this Houston trend is real and maybe they're not that great this year. But we talk about teams competing for 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th seed. Are we sure that if the Pelicans are 3-13 and then everybody's healthy, that they're out of it? Because I don't see any of these mid-tier teams running away with it. How many wins do you think gets the 7th or 8th seed this year?
I think it's still 42, 41 or 42, I think, and you're in the playoffs. And, you know, it's not out of at the end of last season, the Pelicans, after the All-Star break, when they figured it all out, got it all together, they went 18-11. And it was a pretty good stretch for them. We all felt really happy as it went on. It propelled them into the playoffs. But if they go 18-11 right now, that essentially makes them still under 500. So they'd have to rip off a stretch like that at some point and then play slightly better than 500 ball the rest of the season. It's possible. They did it last year with essentially the same roster, so obviously it's possible. It's just less and less likely all the time. And I think what the best win streak this team has gone on since Davis has been around was 8, I think it was, which would still put them right now, they would be at 500. So anything is possible. They could pull it together if the team all comes back healthy. But if they continue while they're waiting for Cole and Pondexter to keep doing these 0-4 weeks or 1-3 weeks, like they'd pull off another 1-3 week and we're, 2-12. It cannot go on like that. They've got to at least play 500 ball from here until the healthy people come back. Or I don't see a way that they're really going to make it to the playoffs. Because a couple of these teams in the Western Conference are going to put it back together and end up being 500 or slightly better. I'm 100% sure of that.
Yeah, the goal for this year shouldn't just be making the playoffs. It should be making the playoffs at any seed that's not the 8th seed.
Because
right.
I don't even want the 8th seed, to be honest. I don't want to play Golden State. I'd rather miss the playoffs and get ping pong, but you're talking 7th seed? I still believe that there's a chance, not likely, but I believe that this team, when healthy, can compete with any non-Golden State team in the playoffs and make it a series. So, yeah, I think it probably takes 42, 43, 44 wins. I don't know. I guess I just have faith. I think this team could reel off. I mean, especially you look at that end of that schedule. If this team, if the defense that I see is trending the way that it's trending, and this isn't just an aberration, that they keep going that way, I just think people say it's only Tyreek. I think Kupon and Norris Cole had such a big impact this year or last year, and they're going to be taking minutes from Ish Smith. And God, can you just imagine Quincy Pondexter getting the 3-point looks that Alonzo Gee got today? So, I don't think it's unreasonable. Like, there's 49 games after January 1st. Let's say that this team has above average health. So, things go really well. What do you think?
Okay.
What do you think?
All right. Impossible.
I know. But let's say that we get, our reparations and we have above average health. All karma comes back our way. Like, what do you think is the highest ceiling, best case scenario, not insane, for those 49 games? Like, what's
30 and 19?
30? You don't think this team is capable, if everything is going right, of being something like 33 and 16?
Nah.
Yeah. See, that's what I just. I mean, I look around the league. What teams, like, if this team is rolling the way that, I guess this is where we differ on where they, how much they could be rolling, but I imagine a team that, I still think that this team with everybody could be a top 3 to 4 offense, and again, a mid-range defense. How many other teams are there in the league that, if that's what you're going into battle with, are you saying that you're an underdog against, or can't be, I mean... I still think that it's possible that this team could go on not Atlanta Hawk type runs from last year, but runs where they win 8 or 9 out of 10 games and do that multiple times. I still don't think that they've dug themselves that big of a hole if they stay relatively healthy, but I think what they've done is greatly reduced the margin of error where, maybe they could get Maybe they kick butt, get everybody healthy, and get back to 500 by January 28th, let's say. But then if an injury happens in February, they don't have the room for error to lose a couple of games again. I think that's what they've cost them. But, I think the chances on this team making the playoffs is going to have nothing to do with now. It's going to have to do with future health. Which we can't predict, but I think we can make a pretty good guess that this team is not going to be lucky in that department.
Yeah.
Just for fun, I'm going to send you the name of somebody that, everybody's talking about Ben Simmons, but I don't think we could get that high in the lottery. I'm going to send you the name right now of somebody that I think Dell would be interested in if he's still here. And if we have a pick in the mid to late lottery, I want you to pronounce them for the audience. That is a real person. And if
that is no.
Yes, that is a real person who will go if he declares in the lottery this year. And I think Dell would love to have and would fit this system incredibly well. What is the man's name?
So you could really twist this name and have it come out horrible. Especially if you say that first name really quick. But it's Furkan Korkmaz.
Oh, yeah.
Korkmaz.
I would love...
I can already see myself sitting at you know, at my on my couch watching a Pelicans game, if he's on this team and he misses like a free throw, and I'll be like, frickin' Korkmaz.
Oh, we gotta get him just for that. Yeah,
that'd be high comedy.
Yeah, I mean he's got a little bit of a I would say he's a European Klay Thompson. He's the Turkish Klay Thompson.
Okay.
That gets you excited. So get a little Furkan in your life. Yeah, well, we're a couple more losing streaks away from talking draft. So,
all right,
just wanted to give you a little bit of a taste. Yeah,
By the way, I should point this out. Reggie Miller, same ages as Eric Gordon, playing the same minutes as Eric Gordon. He was at 22. 3.5 and 4 assists. So Eric Gordon couldn't even keep up with Reggie Miller.
Yeah, I would love.
And Hamilton was always over 4 assists. So.
Let me ask you something. When you watch other teams, and we've watched plenty of different teams so far this year, what type of player do you envy? Like, do you feel like almost every other team has that you feel like that we don't? I mean, is there like a type of player that you envy that you don't feel that we have on this Pelicans team?
Nick Batum.
So.
Just that. We don't have a Swiss Army knife. And we don't have a guy who plays smart basketball and does three different things well. Nothing amazing, but three different things well. So that he can just help everybody else play a little easier. And that's. I mean, we desperately are missing that, and I wish we had. All of our guys are very focused on their game, and I won't go as far as selfish, because I feel like a lot of them are out there and trying to get everybody else involved and trying to play off of one another. But I do believe that, like, the first thing that they think of is, I'm good at this, I'm good at this, I'm good at this, I'm going to do these. And if all of those things aren't possible, or the play is, they then look to teammates. And they might have a play that's like, okay, you have these two options, but they're probably going to think, I'm good at this option, or they're good at that option, so I'm going to do that one thing. And there's just not a lot of flexibility, there's not a lot of imagination, and there's not a lot of reversals. Like, and you know, I love Ryan Anderson. When was the last time you saw him pass around the perimeter ever? And there was three times against Atlanta where I saw they kicked the ball out. It swung to him on the wing, and he was sort of open. But Eric Gordon was wide open on the opposite wing, and Anderson took the shot anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this, you know, Gentry's coming from a team that is all about sharing. I hate Golden State, and I hate that they're that good, but I love the game of basketball, so I love Golden State, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And you just watch their games, man, and it's always the extra pass. And it's not the terrible extra pass where they actually pass up open shot. Like, it's always a good extra pass for a good reason. And it's multiple guys, you know, who do it and who are looking for it and could pass in multiple situations. And it's just, I got to believe that Gentry wants that here. And he's just shocked in some ways that the personnel is not capable of it, at least not yet. I mean, he's basically got to rewire a bunch of guys to play differently. I think if you were to talk to him in an honest moment, he would have thought a lot of those things would have been easier than they are. And I think the Pelicans players want to do it, but you don't just change your skill set and the way that you play and your natural inclinations overnight. Like, that's a process. And I think it's something that's been frustrating for everybody so far right now. I do have some good news, though. The Pelicans this month are shooting 67% from three when they are behind more than 20 points. So
all you need to do is convince the other team they don't need to play defense anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm...
That's good.
Yeah, when we're way behind, we average 192 points per 48 minutes when we're down 20 or more points. So you dig us a big enough hole, and our offense will look good. Yeah, 1-9, it's frustrating. The schedule does not get much easier coming up. I would say I have absolutely no reports on Norris Cole and Quincy Pondexter. There seem to be conflicting things on Pondexter. I thought he would be coming back a little sooner. It sounds like every time Joel Myers is on the telecast, he's getting us is where we're expecting that Pondexter might not be back till December. I was told by somebody who's pretty close with Tyreek that Tyreek's aiming for, ideally, everything goes right the end of next week. I still don't think that'll happen. I think something like November 25th is somewhat realistic, but that still means that the Pelicans are going to have to go into this next week of games, likely without Tyreek. They have a back-to-back, so they're going to be without Drew for at least a game. So
let's rattle off the teams. So Tuesday night versus Denver. So they get to play Denver at home. Then they fly to Oklahoma City for a Wednesday night back-to-back. So no Drew. Yay. Friday, San Antonio. So much easier there. And Sunday, Phoenix comes to town. At least it's not a noon game, so we can forget about the team waking up. I don't know. I still don't get why our team is so terrible at noon games. Anyways, I guess if I had to go in and work at like 8 a.m. at a top peak level, actually I do that, so that's stupid. They should play a damn game. Denver, OKC, San Antonio, and Phoenix. All of these teams are pretty interesting, and they even play Phoenix again the following week. So which of these teams, let's do it a little bit different rather than which one interests you. Which of these teams is the Pelicans most likely to get another win against?
I mean, I think it's clearly Denver, and if you don't beat Denver, I don't know if you win this week. I would say that's the only game that I would put the Pelicans winning at clearly over a 50% chance. So that's,
I remind you that Denver is 5-5 so far this season.
I don't care about right. They were down something like 60-28 against Phoenix two nights ago. I mean, they're not terrible, but I would say that's the best. I would say Pelicans win that game 7 or 8 out of 10 times, and I don't know the way they're playing right now. If they beat any of the other teams, even 3 or 4 out of 10. So I think that's by far your best chance to get a win, even though that's a team that, you know, the last couple of years the Pelicans haven't obviously played well against. But
it is in New Orleans, though. So.
Yeah, it's here, and when you look at what Denver does well, I mean, they turn you over a bit, which is kind of scary. I mean, Ishmith really, he runs that pick and roll, and then if they decide to trap him, he's just so small. And even, you know, it happens with Gordon, too, on the wing. I can't remember, do you think that even 20% of the time when Gordon runs a wing pick and roll, something good happens?
No, never.
Never.
If he doesn't get to the middle, he's dead.
Exactly, yeah. If he runs a middle pick and roll, I have some confidence. On the wing, they just trap him, and it's a turnover, or best-case scenario, he throws it out and resets the play. Like, that's the best-case scenario. So the fact that they could turn you over scares me a little bit. They get to the line a bit. Moutier is really fast, but, I don't worry about that too much. They have a shooter in Gallinari who might be able to go off. Will Barton gave us trouble last time, but, I mean, there's nothing on this roster that I'm, genuinely afraid of. They're pretty much average across the board. I could see the Pelicans winning this game if, Anthony Davis shows up and plays like he did the last couple. I mean, Pelicans have just been terrible on the road. Role players tend to play better at home. So with this game at home, I feel a little bit more confident they get the win.
All right. So And it can't be King Joffrey, because he won't be playing, probably. But he does have a 29 PER, by the way. But other than King Joffrey, who is the guy who scares you? Like, that you're looking at this team and you're like, that dude is going to come out of nowhere and kick the crap out of the Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not just because I picked him up in fantasy this week, but Will Barton. Will Barton really had a good second half to last year. He killed us in a game last season. He's shooting 48% from the field, 42% from three, 90% from the line. Like, he's just one of those kind of wing guys.
And that the Pelicans never have.
Yeah, they never have. They don't tend to focus on. He gets open shot. Like, I liked the effort that Guy put in on Carmelo today. And I think that if you, like, gave him an assignment where the other team's small forward was the primary scorer, I think he would do an admirable job. But, you know, a guy like Barton...
He looked good against DeRozan in the first half, too, in Toronto.
Right, yeah. No, I mean, if another guy's a key guy, but a guy like Barton just kind of floats around, gets the open looks, get the garbage points, gets out in transition. It's just... You know, it's frustrating to me because I thought that even in games that we lost this year, it would be fun to watch this New Orleans team. I thought they would be always playing up-tempo, running, moving, whatever. They look like the oldest young team and the slowest up-tempo team. Like, do you feel like when we watched Summer League, we were like, oh, man, this is going to be fun. Imagine this with real NBA players, even after a make basket, they push the ball up the court. They're running up the court.
It's because there's no passing. There's just not any passing on this team.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like. I absolutely agree. And that's what I feel like it boils down to. If Smith brings the ball up the court, he's not passing until he's taken two or three screens. Eric Gordon brings the ball up the court. He's not passing until he's taken two or three screens. Same thing is true with Drew Holiday. There's this team, if they throw the ball to Anthony Davis, Davis is going to try to score. If they throw the ball to Ryan Anderson, Ryan Anderson is going to try to score. There is no facilitating, no passing on this team at all, and it makes them look like a 1990s basketball team.
And do you think that's going to change with everybody comes back tomorrow. Let's say it takes them a week to get in shape and reacclimated. Do you think that we look at this team with a full roster and are, you know, it's a completely unrecognizable team because they're playing much different? Or, I mean, could it really change it that much?
No, because Tyreke Evans is the same guy. He will pass a little more freely, and I have some hopes that part of the thing is going to be get the ball up the court, have Tyreke run something, and then get the ball to him on the move, or the reverse, like have Tyreke have, you know, get Drew on the move and have something moving there where the play is called, where one of the guards is on the move before they receive it, which isn't happening right now. And part of that's because none of these guards are particularly good off the dribble except for Ish Smith. But Pondexter is a facilitator. He'll move the ball when he sees that the ball should be moved. So that'll help a little bit on the wing. He'll be better at it than Dante or G, but he's not going to have the ball in his hands all the time. Cole will do that. I mean, Cole was in a situation where he played with Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, and he knows, I get the ball into this attack position, and I either kick the ball off or I immediately attack. And so he'll improve it a little bit too. But he's not going to play more than, you know, hopefully, you know, 16, 18 minutes a game.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's just, it's frustrating. That? Well, yeah, I just wonder, I mean, Gentry, I would love to have a conversation with Gentry with some truth serum and just, he's got to be so frustrated right now because I would imagine that he would think that he could have made these guys into that type of player. I'm curious to see if he can. I mean, the Oklahoma City game and San Antonio game, I hate to do this. I'm writing both off as losses. I think the Oklahoma City game, maybe we could have had with Durant out, but Drew's going to be
missing a game. I think this team without Drew Holiday, Tyreek Evans, Doris Cole, and Quincy Pondexter, I think there's maybe two or three teams in the league they could beat on the road. Maybe.
Wow.
Maybe. Okay. Like who? Like Philly, Brooklyn. I think LA. I think the Lakers would give them problems because they are. I think Lou Williams and Jordan Clarkson would have a field day. So I don't even know if they could beat on LA on the road without those guys. I mean, you're talking about playing a bunch of scrubs, a bunch of minutes in the backcourt and on the wing. So I write that off as a loss. The other interesting game to me is Phoenix. I mean, Eric Bledsoe, that team, when you look at their players, it's basically a bunch of guys playing at an average level and Eric Bledsoe playing basically the way that Dragic did for them a couple years ago when they won 48 games or whatever.
Yeah, their lines are surprisingly similar, except Bledsoe's got a little bit more steals.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously the better defensive player. So, yeah, I mean, Bledsoe's playing like an all-star. Bunch of average guys. They have games where they just blow teams out or could hang with anybody, and then they have other games where they lose to what you would think is inferior teams. I just think they're a team that's kind of all over the map, but, you know, they obviously have a strength at guard where it's our biggest weakness right now. What do you like? What do you dislike about this matchup?
About the matchup? I still think Anthony Davis should just be able to destroy Markieff Morris. I think Markieff has a definite ego and that he would be convinced he could take Davis both offensively, defensively, and I think Davis should be able to shred him. Outside of that, like their best defenders, other than Bledsoe, who's going to be a problem, are on the wing, and the Pelicans don't have any good wings, so I guess that's not really a problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, unless this is the game that, like, you know, an Archie Goodwin or a T.J. Warren's just going to go off for 30.
I'm not worried about Archie Goodwin at all. Not even a little bit.
I mean,
that guy's already proven to me 100% that he is not a NBA basketball player.
Devin Booker.
Which is stupid because he's 20 years old, so I should probably shut up. But anyways.
Devin Booker lit us up in summer league, cost us our perfect record.
He did.
We
should kill him. We should take him out for that.
Just retribution.
All right, so, but if you look on this team, is it Bledsoe and Brandon Knight who you think are the most, like, the guys who are just going to light us up?
I really worry, and I want to know what they're going to do in the front court. Like, we saw today when Robin Lopez was in the game, Gentry said, all right, I'm going to put a traditional center out there. I wonder what he's going to do with Tyson Chandler, because, you know, Tyson Chandler is more athletic.
He's a hard diver.
Yeah, he's not really a post-up threat, which is probably the best thing that Omer gives us right now. Do you think that when Tyson's on the court that he's going to go with a traditional center like a Sheik or a Ginza, or do you have the feeling that he's going to go more AD there and play small ball?
I think he will still go a Sheik for a good stretch of the first quarter.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
I don't even think it's necessarily that bad because, you know, Tyson Chandler will embarrass him a couple times by slipping that pick and roll at just the right time, hard charging, getting lobs. But the real danger with Tyson Chandler on this team, like Tyson Chandler in, for this team is not even getting 5 shots a game. So I think you can live with a couple dunks and that's it.
I'm worried more about the offensive rebounds or tip-outs.
That's what you can't. I mean, he's still a phenomenal rebounder. He's getting 10 rebounds a game in 27 minutes.
Yeah.
He is a phenomenal rebounder. They've got to have somebody out there who could fight him for that kind of on the glass. So.
Yeah, and that's what I wonder, if they go with AD's athleticism to fight him or Ashiq, because if Ashiq doesn't get a crisp box out on him, you know, Chandler's going to go right around him. Do you counter Chandler? Do you counter his athleticism or his size? I'm curious to see what they're going to do with that. I just, I don't know. They have a collection of guys who, I mean, is this a night where John Lohr gets loose and hits a couple of threes? Or Markieff Morris, who's been struggling, he gets going. I don't know. I since they're not prolific from the outside, I tend to think that this is a team that the Pelicans could do a good job against on the defensive end. I just wonder, with two ball-hawking guards like that pressuring, you know, a bunch of guys who are turnover-prone and we don't pass or pass well to begin with, I'm really concerned about those two causing a lot of havoc and turning this team over and, you know, playing off of Ish Smith and Brandon Knight uses his length to double AD in the post, and then when he kicks it out, you know, Brandon Knight is right back there, or Ish Smith doesn't take the shot anyway. I'm actually more concerned with how we match up with them when we're on offense than the other way around, which is a little weird.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm also terrified of what T.J. Warren is going to do to us.
T.J.,
because, and he's not a three-point shooter, but it feels to me that this team is really bad at defending guys who receive the ball on the wing after, like, a primary pick and roll, and that guy just catches and goes right at the rim. It feels like our team, just the rotations are too slow, their interior guys aren't quick enough to guard, and that guy just gets right to the rim. And what I just described to you is what T.J. Warren does best, is catch and go right at the rim, full speed. So,
if you could have if you could have one guy back for the Phoenix home and home, who would you pick of our injured guys?
Well, it's still Tyreke Evans.
Yeah,
it's gotta. I mean, it's gotta be Tyreke Evans. Like, we need another creator, a guy who can handle and break that the defense. Like, and I know our defense is so bad, but I'm also willing to bet that our defense won't look quite so bad if their offense didn't suck so terribly, so that the other team was getting rebounds and going.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other part that I left out in my theory on why our second half defense is so much worse. I think teams make an adjustment at halftime, kind of shut down our offense, and then, you know, they're not taking the ball out of the basket as much.
Yeah.
We're not a set. So, yeah, I think the Phoenix game could kind of be the game that swings our week, but it wouldn't be insane if an 0-4 week is not out of the question, and that's just sad. And if that happens, then maybe I will come on the podcast and talk a little bit more draft next week.
So, you got to make your prediction, though. So, your prediction for this week is 3 home games.
Yeah, I think this team is much better at home, especially offensively. I think they get a win in Denver, and that gets a little juice in them. So, I'm going to go 2-2. And I wouldn't be shocked if one of those wins was San Antonio. I still think...
Oh, stop
it. I still think it's a nice matchup for us. I still think AD gets up for it. I'm going to say that it's going to be Denver and Phoenix, but I wouldn't be the most shocked person in the world if we beat San Antonio. I give us 5% against OKC. I would give us 25% against San Antonio. I don't think it's an impossible game to win.
Okay, so... I'm not going to give in to my stupid optimism like I had last week, where I was just like, oh, let's just hope that something good will happen. 1-3. So,
well, that's another win.
Everybody's sad.
And you know what?
It's another win.
It's another win, and you know
right.
We got one win last week, so you know what that means.
Yeah. Yes, I do. And I've been preparing all week. I've been studying up on my rap history. All
right. Well, I'm excited because... Star Wars Battlefront comes out this week. I already have it pre-downloaded. It will be mine Monday at midnight.
Okay.
We also have the Star Wars movie coming out. So I figured let's kind of merge the two. We'll talk about rap and Star Wars. First question for you. Do you know what Yoda is a slang for in the rap game? I'll give you a clue.
Oh, I figured it'd be some sort of like... mentor or wise man, right?
No, that is not what it is.
Okay.
E40, also known as 40 Water, says in a song that, you know, he's not about Star Wars, but he is about Yoda. basically, he's not a Star Wars person, but Yoda is a slang for green bud or marijuana. So...
Really?
Yep.
I had never heard that.
So, yeah, so people, if somebody says pass that Yoda, that is what they're referring to, and hopefully you don't have any at work.
That's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, so that's just an example. But what we're going to do here is I am going to give you lyrics that, so all of these are references to Star Wars. So I'm going to give you the rhyme, but I'm going to leave something blank. And that blank is going to be a Star Wars either character, referent, whatever.
Okay.
So here's an example of where we'll start. So this is a very popular song by Notorious B.I.G. You might know him better as Biggie Smalls, called Hypnotize. He says... Tell them ho, take they clothes off slowly, hit them with the force like blank.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, because it rhymes.
All right, close. He just goes with Obi, but yeah. So tell them ho, take they clothes off slowly, hit them with the force like Obi. All right, good one.
See, you're making this too easy for me.
All right, well, don't get cocky. Look at you. You get one right, and all of a sudden you run the game.
That's right.
A Tribe Called Quest. You familiar with them?
No.
Not at all. Okay.
Nah, never even heard of them.
Okay. No, because he moved like the wind in flight, counterattack like a blank. No.
Jedi Knight.
Nice. 2 for 2. All right. Look at you getting all excited. This is Lupe Fiasco. I'm guessing you.
Biggest day of the entire basketball season for me.
Lupe Fiasco, I'm guessing you have no idea who this is.
I don't know.
No plaque, but a whole lot of cheese. This is the drill. Mr. Chill gave me the green light like blank.
What?
One more time.
Run that through me one more time.
No plaque, but a whole lot of cheese. This the drill. Mr. Chill gave me the green light like blank. This one doesn't rhyme. See, look at you.
No, see, now I'm struggling. Green light like... I don't know. So who's got a green light? I guess Vader had a green light to kill people. So Darth Vader?
Yoda knife.
It's a lightsaber. It's not a knife.
It's a Yoda knife. All right. So you're 2-1.
You're either gonna
go out average.
I'm already doing better than the Pelican, so.
Wow.
Way to bring the tone down.
So we've got 2 from RZA. Actually, RZA references a couple, so I'll let you have.
I noticed you didn't ask me if I knew who that was.
Do you know who RZA is?
No, I had no idea.
If you had to guess, he's a member of maybe one of the 3 most famous groups.
Wu-Tang Clan.
Nice!
Because there's like 80,000 of them, I hear.
Wow. Okay, so he references a ton, along with Wu-Tang Clan. So we'll just go rapid fire. I shoot like blank inside the cockpit.
Well, Han. Unless it's Luke. Let's see. I'll go Han.
I shoot like Luke Skywalker inside the cockpit.
All right.
This is another character in the blank. Pocket fat be blank. Pocket fat be blank. If your pocket was fat, who would it be like?
Jabba?
Yep. Pocket Fat be Jabba the Hutt.
Okay.
Wu-Tang Clan, deep in space like the blank. Deep in space like the blank.
Death Star.
Millennium Falcon.
Ugh.
Her cousin...
Death Star sounded more forbidding and scary.
This is RZA in one of your favorite songs, Drink, Smoke, and Fuck.
Okay, yeah.
Her cousin Tawana, she hairy like...
Chewbacca.
Nice.
Some of these are pretty soft.
This one's pretty good. I'm in the cloud. Okay. I'm in the clouds like my land, like my man blank.
Lando.
Yeah. I'm in the clouds like my man, Carlissian Lando, bus shots like Marlon Brando. And then lastly, RZA, my Glock is dark as.
What?
My Glock.
My Glock.
Do you know what a Glock is?
Yeah, I know what a Glock is.
Oh, okay.
It's dark as.
Another
what?
Star Wars character.
I mean, Darth Vader is dark. But...
Yep, my Glock is dark as Vader. So.
I don't know, making a comparison to a gun to Vader, I guess. Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Vader's so much cooler than a Glock, though.
So those are some Star Wars Battlefront. If anybody's really good, my name on Xbox Live, Xbox One, is Daruckus09. If you're good and you want to carry me because I'm terrible at first-person shooters, go ahead.
I don't think that's a selling point there.
Well, some people like to... like to carry. I mean, I'll be the Alonzo G of the team.
Okay.
I'll occasionally provide something good that, you know, gets you excited because you expect nothing, and that's what I'll be. A lot of my friends actually use me as a shield, like on Halo and that.
Very nice.
They send me out and just let me get lit up so they can see where the bullets are coming from. So
you can be like Alonzo G with lots of shots and lots of misses.
There you go. Like Vader. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
So that's it. So hopefully we'll have more wins so we can continue this. 4 games this week. Ryan has lost all his optimism, as you've heard.
I have. I'm so depressed, man.
And he's already looking forward to the Turkish Clay Thompson.
That's right.
Just so he could say Furcon.
It makes me think of, like, a hairy Star Trek guy.
Well, all right.
All right, so thanks everybody for listening to In the Know, and hopefully we'll be much more cheerful next time.